Lord, it is a 4th of July Independence Day spectacular. It's coming. It's coming. It's right around the corner. One of my favorite holidays. We got a great show for you today, you guys. Value added. You've got me, Michael Loftus. You've got the Liberty Gypsy, the Queen of the Gimlets. And we also have a great guest for you today. You want to hang out? You want to listen to our interview with Antonio F. Bronco. A.F. Bronco. You've seen his stuff. You've seen his political cartoons. He's fantastic. We're going to talk to him about the political cartoon biz. We're going to learn. We're going to laugh. We're going to love. But first, I love doing that. But first, we got to get into the world of politics. Gypsy, it was a crazy week again. It was a crazy week again. I feel like Sean Hannity. It's a big, big news night.
I just think it's going to get crazier from here. I think we are in for complete batshit crazy from now till November.
Here's the wonderful thing. I called it on Fox a couple Sundays ago. Yeah. I'm like, it's a race. It's a race on the left to see who can be the most offensive, who can do the most, who can say the most bombastic thing. It is a liberal circle jerk right now. With you've got Seth Rogen getting stroked by his buddies, and he's like, I didn't take a picture with Paul Ryan. I didn't do that. And then you got Maxine Waters, and she's furiously, you know, with her fist flying. I told him to attack people in gas stations, and it's just a giant. The sky is falling. They're surrounded by Nazis. It's death camps. It's the worst of times. They are in full meltdown. And I agree with you. It's just gonna get worse. And now with the Supreme Court.
Oh my God.
Now with that going, how much pressure is Ruth Bader Ginsburg feeling? That poor lady. She's just holding on.
No, they have a plan within the Democratic Party, some kind of Weekend at Bernie's thing to get her through Trump.
Don't you die on me. Don't you die. They're like, I think it was the New York Times or the Washington Post the other day was like literally putting out pictures of her doing her exercises. Like, oh, see how healthy? God. See, she's healthy. Look at that. She's planking. Look at her. She's doing.
she falls asleep at State of the Unions.
Oh, that poor lady. I really, you've got, what is it? It's Kennedy. He's retiring because he's 81.
God bless him.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg's 85.
Yeah, but I heard back before the election that she was saving her retirement so that Hillary could appoint her replacement. Now that hasn't happened and she's kind of stuck.
I literally feel bad for her. Because there's no way. I mean, my mother there's a time. I don't want to get too personal.
You're going to get in trouble with mom now.
Exactly. So I'm self-editing. But I know my mom, who's insanely active and does a boatload of stuff. I think if someone were to go up to my mother, who's in her 80s, and like, hey, feel like being on the Supreme Court? She'd be like, are you high? Are you crazy? I want to work in my garden, and I want to look at the groundhogs and the birds.
Spend time with my grandkids.
So Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and then who else? Who else is getting ready to retire?
Was it Breyer?
There's another guy who's.
There's one that's 80, and there's one, and she's 85. I think it's Stephen Breyer that's 80.
Yeah, they're saying if Trump wins again in 2020, that all told he could get five. All told, he could get five. So I want to thank everybody, and I said this in the vlog this week on the YouTube channel, where like for all those people who were like, I don't like Donald Trump, however, I'm going to vote for him because I don't want Hillary to get a Supreme Court pick. At that point in time, it was like, it's one Supreme Court. You know what? I'm going to hold my nose and I'm going to vote for Donald Trump in the hopes that he gets one. You guys, That's paying off like craps table odds in Vegas. You thought you were going to get one. Boom. You might get five. It's wonderful.
I go with four. Five seems like a lot. Sotomayor.
I'm happy with
young.
Gorsuch. I'm happy. Oh, yeah, no. I'm happy with one.
Everybody would
criticize Trump early on in his presidency, and they're like, yeah, he sucks, but Gorsuch, he couldn't get rid of Obamacare, but Gorsuch, am I right? Well, you know what? Suck my wiener, people. Yeah, Gorsuch, and another, and another, and another. It'll be great.
I was thrilled that Kennedy did the right things in this last term. The other thing, and this is too wonky probably to really go into much, but the Janus decision, I could have done cartwheels in my living room.
What now? Which one is the Janus decision? Is that the union one?
That's the public union decision where you have non-members that are working in these agencies who choose not to join the union, but the union was still collecting what they call agency fees from them. So
yeah,
fees for negotiations and things like this. But if you look at those public unions, they are bar none the largest donors, some of the largest donors to the Democratic Party. So
was that decision a 5-4?
Yes.
I don't see how it was even that close.
Neither do I.
That's the other thing with this. And once again, I said this in the vlog as well. I don't want people on the Supreme Court making new laws or interpreting, oh, here's what someone was feeling when they wrote this law. Here's what someone really meant. Like, no, what does the flippin' piece of paper say? And how does that jive with the Constitution?
The thing. You don't get to compel speech in this country. You don't get to limit my speech if you're the government, but you also don't get to compel my speech.
It was crazy to me.
I know.
When you break it down into the simplest of terms, you know, it's like, hey, listen, I know you're not in the union, but we're going to take this money from you every week to do something that the union wants to do. Trust us. It's in your best interest. That's mafia. That's the mafia.
Yeah. Well,
coming around going, hey,
are just,
you got a nice candy shop here. It'd be too bad if something happened to us. So give us a little bit of money. We're going to make things right with the cops. That's what it is. It's freaking Goodfellas.
Yeah, well, this is probably the only thing I've ever agreed with FDR on, but public unions are an abomination. I mean, all it is something inside the government or inside an agency that requires funding from the government, like schools, that encourages the bureaucracy to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, the unions are a big part of that. They're the barrier to school choice and teaching. They're the barrier to a lot of improvements in government process. I mean, it's just, they're an abomination.
And for our dear gentle listeners, you look at who makes up the government, like the people who wake up in the morning and they go to work for the federal government. For the most part, I think it's like 90% of them are Democrats.
Well, yeah, and they're also reliant on the government staying the same size or getting larger for their livelihood.
Exactly.
So who are they going to vote for?
Exactly. Who are they going to vote for? Which way do you think they're going to lean?
Yeah.
And that's the wonderful thing that I think needs to be highlighted. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you can't, you know, if you've got 120 ducks in a little pond, the ducks are all going to go, we need a bigger pond. We want a bigger pond. Mm-hmm. Now you're the farmer and you're like, no, I need to grow corn here or whatever. Ducks are always going to vote for a bigger pond.
One of the best underreported stories, like last week, I think it was.
You're about to say the same thing. We're about to say the same thing. Go ahead.
The Trump administration wanting to combine the Department of Labor and Department of Education.
Yes! That's exactly it. Mick Mulvaney.
I love me some Mick.
And it's flying under the radar.
Yeah.
And literally, I was thinking of it in the same moment you were about to bring it up. And I'm like, no one is talking about this.
But fantastic.
They are going to dramatically make government smaller. And I feel bad. Like, you don't want to talk about it. Like, you see your buddy who's doing something really cool, but he can only get away with it if no one's looking. Like, if we highlight it, people are all going to start looking. But yeah, it's great. And I love the way that guy is good at explaining stuff. You know, he's like, if you've got a pizza, that falls under, you know, the USDA. Now, if you put pepperoni on that pizza, then it becomes a food and drug thing. And if you put green peppers on it, it becomes this, that, and the other. It was a great example. It shows how bloated our bureaucracy is. Mm-hmm. We're still running on a World War II size government. Mm-hmm. And it's just getting bigger and bigger. And then when you try to make it smaller, they go, oh, that's a cut. You can't cut Social Security. You can't cut that. You're cutting. No, I'm just stopping the rate of growth, you morons.
Well, no, and everybody, those two agencies don't belong together. Well, yeah, they do, because education has two purposes. One is to create knowledgeable citizens who can participate in this process we have in this country. And the other one is to get them prepared to be able to feed themselves. So,
yeah.
If you take the Department of Labor, who does a ton of research on the workforce and what kind of skills employers need, who can then tell the Department of Education, right, those types of people, we need to be training people on this, and maybe we need to bone up these programs, and let's forget about underwater lesbian basket weaving at the university level. I mean, I think you could get something amazing.
I am all in favor. I am all in favor. I remember I was writing a monologue like a year, maybe 2 years ago, and I was really doing some research into the Department of Energy, and that one's insane. Mm-hmm. That one's insane.
Well, and Rick Perry's just been sitting there cutting it and cutting it and cutting it, and nobody's talking about that either.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, so that's like the good news. Mm-hmm. That's the good news. Now, we still have the immigration thing. They had another march yesterday.
Everybody's showing up.
They're marching today because – and before all is said and done, I was joking around with a buddy of mine the other day. Like, before all is said and done, not only is Trump himself, you know, rounding up children, but I think because we're Nazis now. Everybody's a Nazi. They
half
just
the country.
They've declared it on MSNBC. If you support this president, it's not on him, it's on you. You're a Nazi. By the time November comes, we're going to be cannibals.
Well,
we're going to be Nazi cannibals who survive off the flesh and the pure souls of children.
I just had the funniest thing flash through my head. MSNBC is trying to Catholic guilt the entire country.
They are.
It's like, it's not on him, it's on you.
And they love trotting out the bishops, you know, that they love trotting out the clergy, and Catholics will fall for it. Catholics lined up in droves to vote for Obama, which I couldn't reconcile. I just don't see. But it's like, well, Jesus would have helped those people. Jesus would have given the shirt off. Jesus would have. I'm like, well, you know what? Jesus also wouldn't have stabbed a pregnant woman and taken the unborn baby out of her. Like, how can you – like, I can understand. You can still – here, Democrats, liberals, if any of you are listening, you can still help the poor. You can still behave in a godly fashion. You can still feed people and give aid and comfort to the sick and the dying. But, like, if you're voting for Democrats, you're pretty much voting for let's start killing babies. Let's continue that mass murder.
And not only that, the government doesn't do anything efficiently. Nothing they have decided to jump in and try to fix, other than getting to the moon. I'll give them that one. Is any better now than during the Great Society? They haven't fixed poverty. They haven't fixed anything. If you want to see how people are actually fixing their communities and helping the poor, go on Facebook. There's a guy named Mike Rowe, and he has a show called Returning the Favor. And it's all about people in their communities doing great things to help people in need and not taking anything from the government.
Yeah. And just to get back to your NASA thing, because I always give that one up too. Like, the government fails at everything. The only thing they've ever kind of done well, they got us to the moon. And I was thinking about that. And the only reason that happened
Nobody
was because
was
of computers. computers were so insanely expensive.
Right.
Only the government could spend that kind of money. And now, whatever, we got Elon Musk and all this. Here's what I think is going on. I want to talk bigger picture stuff. And this is something, this is food for thought for everyone. Because I love it when I think I figured stuff out. And it's not really that deep, so I don't want to build it up that big. The playbook for the liberals, like, they really wanted Ted Cruz to run because they knew how to beat that guy. Because traditionally, you get like literally like a choir boy, like a Mitt Romney, and you go, "Hey, you hate women." And he's like, no, I don't. And da, 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 da. And then he gets all tongue tied and I have binders full of women. And then he just starts digging himself a hole. You call Ronald Reagan a racist, and oh, he hates gay people, he hates black people. Usually that's all you have to do, is just you wait until someone gets popular on the conservative side, if you're a liberal, and then you call them a racist, a Nazi, a misogynist. There's a few catchphrases, and then it works, and then the person is done. And Trump don't play that. And
no.
It's wonderful to watch. And now they're trying everything. Oh, he's a Nazi. And he just continues on. And he never apologizes. He just continues on. And so now they're like, well, the entire Republican Party is just Nazis. And now people are realizing, holy crap, you can just continue on. And now everybody who votes Republican, half the country is a Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to continue on. And there has to be a great weeping and gnashing of teeth at the DNC, because they've literally, there's nowhere else for them to go. That's why I made the joke about by November, we'll all be cannibals. You know,
yeah.
That's the only thing left. That's all that's left. We started as deplorables. And now literally, Donnie Deutsch, and Joe Scarborough, and oh my God, Joe Scarborough. Here's the thing. I'm sorry, I'm a bit of a tirade. I saw Scarborough the other day. I'm in New York, okay? So I'm on East Coast time. I'm watching my morning Joe. Joe Scarborough was talking about how great the economy was under Barack Obama. And he goes, Donald Trump inherited a booming economy. For 8 years, 7 years, 7 years, our economy was exploding. And I just wanted to smack him. Like, you realize an explosion is a fast thing. Like, an explosion isn't seven. And you're like, this is the first president who couldn't crack a three on the GDP. For the first guy to actually just like totally crap the bed. Our economy was horrible. And for Joe Scarborough, like, he always gets on Trump. Trump's a liar. He's lying about this. Really? Our economy was booming for 7 years?
Yeah, nobody else felt that, Joe. Glad it went well for you. The fastest growing economy under Obama was the greater D.C. area. It was one of the only places wages were going up.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Just real quick on Joe Scarborough. He tried to hold Mika's hand the other morning. On the air.
Ew.
They're on the air. They're getting ready to wrap it up. And he reaches over. And it wasn't creepy at all. It wasn't creepy at all. Like, they're gonna get married. They're a couple. Everyone knows they're knocking boots. He, like, reaches over to grab her hand, to make a point. And I'm not kidding you. She pulls her hand away. She pulls her hand away, and now he's got to cover. He's got to be like, hey, what's up with that? And she's like, no, not on the air. Like, she's like Madeline Kahn in Young Frankenstein. Taffeta, darling. Oh, I just did my makeup. Don't touch me. Oh, it was wonderful. It was so wonderful. It was just the perfect metaphor for their little relationship. Joe wants to get a little something, and Mika's grossed out. Oh, we're not doing that. I don't think we'll be doing that today. But it's getting worse, you guys. It's getting worse. We're all Nazis.
It's not getting worse, because in that rhetoric, it's getting so much better. Because if you look at polling, independents are pulling away from Democrats and coming much closer to Republicans. The share of anything on immigration, on whatever, independents are going upward. So if Republicans are 75% agree, independents are like 68 and Dems are like 52, you know? So yeah. This is not a bad thing, and I hope they stay ridiculous, because all they had to do was come up with one or two good policy ideas and not be crazy, and they couldn't do it.
It looks like they're going to run left. It looks like they're going to go farther left. This this young woman, I think she's in Queens. I apologize. I don't know her name. Bronx. She's a straight up.
From the Bronx.
A straight up socialist.
Oh, yeah, and not only
and
that.
And she won in a huge landslide.
You listen to, she's a 28-year-old bartender, and people are asking her serious policy questions.
And she can just go, if we all shared more. Yeah, the government should do that.
And we're going to guarantee jobs. We're going to guarantee housing. Have you looked at her platform?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. It makes Bernie Sanders look conservative.
It's wonderful, as long as it doesn't stick. That's the thing we're going to have to be on the lookout for, to see if it sticks. I think that there's a lot of young, wonderfully naive voters in this country who are literally, they're thinking, we should give it a shot. We should give socialism a shot. So we just got to be really, really loud and very vocal about the dangers of socialism. It never works out. It never works out. And the only thing you can count on is giant piles of dead bodies. That's it. A lot of people will die. Guaranteed.
Well, so, it was actually interesting because, you know who Ayaan Hirsi Ali is?
No, I do not.
The anti-Islam activist who escaped Somalia. She's a victim of FGM, etc.
Ugh.
Yeah. She got a couple years ago, she got invited to get an honorary degree from Brandeis University. I think it was Brandeis. And there was such an outcry that they took it away from her because the Islamic Students Union and, you know, the left basically started screeching. Her husband is actually a professor. He's been a professor at Oxford. He's been a professor at Harvard. His name is Niall Ferguson. And he's a history professor. And basically what he said is in the institutes of higher learning, right, the history is not being taught because when a Cold War professor retires, they're replaced with a social science history major like gender studies history.
Yeah.
So all of that history about the Soviet Union and the terrors of communism, it's almost absent at Harvard.
It's absent everywhere. Absent everywhere. And we're just the team to do it. Let's make socialism relevant again. I will make fun of that stuff till the cows come home. Everybody knows, Hitler's a bad guy. Hitler killed a lot of people. Hitler was a very, very, very bad guy. You know who else was bad? Stalin. And he killed more than Hitler. And that was communism, baby. And then you got Chairman Mao. There's always a big, big pile of dead bodies. There's mass starvations. Let's round them up and kill them. No one's talking about it, but we will shed light on this. The comedic light of capitalism. We will keep slow. We have got to, switch gears. We got Tony Bronco. We got AF Bronco. Political cartoonist. This guy's fantastic. He's a rock and roller. He had a band. We're going to find out if he's still playing with Tony and the Tigers. He does it all. Let's talk with Tony. Antonio Branco joining us today. Tony, one of the premier. This is great. This is a political cartoonist. This is a funny guy who looks at things from a different perspective. We're so used to seeing the left trashing on the right. I'm looking at your work. If I may call you Tony, is that cool?
Absolutely.
All right. I love how you're coming from a different perspective. Now, I'm sure this is going to be boring for you, because this is probably the first question you always get when you do interviews. It's like, how did you get started in this?
It's not boring. I work in an office all by myself for hours, so any human contact is good contact. How did I get started?
Yeah.
I started drawing in school, in grammar school, and through high school when I should have been doing other things.
Dang
and
it.
It just took it from there. I've always drawn. I've always been into drawing, painting, that type of thing. I always dabbled in some cartooning. Probably seriously, was looking at it seriously when Obama took office, and I saw what was going on there with some of his ideas and the things that he was pushing through were scary as far as I was concerned. I don't think that America was set up for that type of thing. It was bound to hit some conflicts in the Supreme Court, which it has. All the executive orders he was putting down, it was just, you know, and I just didn't agree with much of it. So my way of venting on that was to draw cartoons.
Now, here's what I want to know. When you have to draw a cartoon of someone, because you always, you know, you go to like a street fair or festival, you always have those like cartoonist people who like, we're going to draw you with a giant head riding a skateboard. You know, it's like that kind of thing. Now, I do impressions in my, now I can't do Trump. I can't do him. So I do Chris Walken, because I just think if you dial Trump up a little bit more, you get Chris Walken. We're going to make America great again. Now, what was your key to like drawing Obama? What's your key to when you have to define somebody in a cartoon? Like, I know a lot of people went like just giant ears because Obama does have those big old ears. Yeah. So what did you key in on?
Well, I did key on his ears. I knew it bothered him. I heard that. So obviously, if he ever happened to see one of my cartoons, the first thing he would see is his ears and a few other attributes that he has. And I think every cartoonist tries to key on the attributes that people notice about a person instantly, and then you try to expand on that a little bit.
Because your Obama's always had really long faces too.
Yeah,
like he had big ears and a long face.
Right.
Now, here's the conflict. Now, well, I guess it's the challenge, I guess, for you as the artist. So you've got to, now you're drawing a ton of Trump pictures, and I have to think the first thing that sticks out to me, it's the hair. You got to go big, right, sweeping hair, blah, blah, blah. However, you don't. Do you find yourself like, oh man, I could make this a little bit more cartoony on Trump, but you're trying to make fun of the other side. So do you have to like find the balance there, and is that tough?
No, it's not tough. I try to do the cartoon that fits the situation, and it's all about trying to put a point across. And that's it. Nothing complicated about that. People complain I don't make him large enough or fat enough or ugly enough or cute enough, or, you know, I'm getting that quite a bit, and I really don't, you know, I do them the way I do them. And if you've noticed in certain cartoons, I do them a little bit differently depending on what the cartoon is.
Yeah. I did notice that. Now, how about this? Who's your favorite person to draw right now? Who's the person that you wish was in the news more because they just got a funny looking face and you have a good time drawing them?
You know, I look at it like a challenge when somebody new pops up. I try to look at it okay, I've never drawn this person before, or how can I expand on it? I used to enjoy drawing Obama because he came across so arrogant a lot of times. So I tried to draw him with his nose up, and the long face was a part of that. Tried to capture that arrogant look that he sometimes had. But they're all fun to draw. And I really, right off the top of my head, I can't see a favorite.
Your Hillary was pretty good too.
There again, there's another example of drawing her differently in different situations. I could draw her looking really evil or witchy or goofy. One of my favorite cartoons that I did about her, and you don't even see her face. And that's the one where Bill Clinton, she's coming down and caught Bill Clinton on the phone, and he says, "Would you believe it's Jake from State Farm?" That's one of my favorites, and she's, you know, just because it captures Bill in his essence.
Yeah. Now, here's this, I'm fascinated with this because I'll go on stage and I'll do jokes, and I can cast a pretty wide net. I mean, just like, okay, if that joke didn't work, I got one, you know, right behind it, or maybe I can make a funny face and save it, or do a silly voice. You know, I feel like I have a lot of. If one aspect of my act fails, I have some tricks to try to save stuff. Like, do you have a? It's got to be tough to define things in one moment. I'm really in awe, and I really respect it because you've got to have, first of all, an interesting and funny visual, and yet something concise and hilarious to say with the dialogue. I mean, it is. How do you distill it down to like the one moment? Like, here is the moment, and like choosing not to even put Hillary in the cartoon where you've got, you know, Bill answering the phone. Like, I just don't know. Do you go through like sketch after sketch after sketch and then finally.
Sometimes I have. In that particular cartoon, all you see is the back of her head and the back of her. You don't see her face. She's in the cartoon, but she's standing there with her hands on her hips, and Bill's on the phone saying, would you believe it's Jake from State Farm? So she is in the cartoon. Sometimes I'll draw sketch after sketch, and I try to whittle it down. Some of the best advice I ever received was from Michael Ramirez. And went early on, this is quite a few years ago, and I just asked for a couple of tips. And he said, well, and he'd seen a few of my cartoons.
Yeah.
So he said this. He says, make one point and make it and sharpen it. A cartoon that has more than one point in it, usually everything gets lost. So you want to try and make one point. And I just took that advice and tailored it to my own thing. And it was good advice.
You know, I was lucky enough to interview Mike Ramirez, and that guy, he's so casual. You're extremely casual. Is there like a cartoonist code of ethics where you guys just don't get
maybe it's up? The drugs. It might be the drugs. Don't. I'm just kidding. No, I saw that interview actually. I saw that interview and I enjoyed it very much. You were very good, and I enjoyed watching that.
Well, it's a good time. I got nothing. I've you know, like most people, I doodle, and I've kind of self taught and blah blah blah. I wish I was better. I'm horrible, but I really 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 respect the craft of it all. And here's the thing, and it's because we're kind of like birds of a feather here. When you tell a great joke or you do a great cartoon, it looks so easy, right? Mm-hmm. People just look at it and go, "Oh, that's great! I wish I could do that." You're like, "Well, you know, it's not. You just don't fall off a log and start doing it."
No, no, that's for sure, And like you said, comedians. They have material, they work their material, and the same with a cartoonist. You know, there's times where you think you have an ace cartoon that's going to, you know, really get a point across, make people laugh, and it's going to be great. It goes out there, and it doesn't necessarily flop, but it doesn't have the the results that you were expecting. You go back to the drawing board, literally.
Right? That's great. Now, so this brings up my next question. It's like you've got the book out, Make America Laugh Again.
Right.
That everybody needs to get this. Make America Laugh Again. Did you just take everything and go, here it is, America? These are all my political cartoons. Or do you go through? Did some have to like sit on the pile of maybe for the next book? Like, how did you pick and choose?
Well, of course, it's 80 pages, and I think we have a total of about 120 cartoons in it. Wow. And my last book came out in 2015, so it's a pick and choose the best, the ones that are still timely, because political cartoons don't have a very long shelf life. So you have to kind of pick, and when you're doing a book, will they be able to relate to this now? Because this was like 3 years ago, or this was a year ago, and it didn't really hit the news real strong. So when you're trying to find the funniest cartoons that people are going to enjoy sitting down and reading, if it's a coffee table book, so if somebody picks it up, you want to get some laughs and have them enjoy the book and understand it, and you just have an all around. You want people to say, "Hey, look, this funny book. You got to order it."
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. Now this is my experience. I find that like the familiar themes keep coming back around again. You know, in politics, this whole, you know, like Bernie Sanders and his, "Oh, isn't socialism wonderful?" And now you've got this this girl in Queens who's like, "Oh, isn't socialism wonderful? I'm a democratic socialist." Do you ever find yourself going, "Man, I've already got a cartoon for this"?
Yes. Like,
yes. And then what do you do? How do you put the new spin on it?
Well, yeah, you just take that concept or whatever it was 2 years ago you were trying to get across, because news recycles. I mean, we're still talking about gun issues. We're still talking about SCOTUS. We're still talking about religious freedom and the Second Amendment. So those things keep coming back around. And as you're drawing cartoons, some of those topics might drop off, but you know they're coming back. So I kind of hang on to all my sketches and try to remember when something comes back again, "Oh, good, I can use this. I've always wanted to use this particular drawing." And so, it does. I'm sure that as a comedian, you do the same thing. You probably pick and choose and bring about things that you thought of, you know, a year ago. It's, "Oh, yeah, well, now I can use that."
Well, here's my idea. I have like a ton of old notebooks. I'm literally, I'm staring at four of them right now. And I'll occasionally go back through, and usually I'm like, "Wow, what was I thinking?"
But it keeps the creative juices flowing.
Hopefully it'll spark something. Like, right. You've done some great Maxine Waters cartoons. Now they're just fantastic, and I think that she's a barrel of laughs. She's the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, she's just it's completely ridiculous. I mean, absolutely. Completely ridiculous. And then you got, I remember when Bill O'Reilly said that she had, oh, who did he compare her wig to?
James Brown.
James Brown, yeah.
Yeah, and like all hell broke loose. Do you have? Do you ever get people complaints like, "Okay, you've gone past cartoony now, and now you're on like thin ice"?
Never happened to me.
That's great.
I'm just kidding.
Oh no! Damn it! Here I am, so optimistic. I'm like, "Oh, that's wonderful."
Yeah. I won't let my wife read my hate mail anymore.
Oh wow.
Recently, wow. In upstate New York, there was a cartoonist who did a picture of an MS-13 gang member holding a baby at the border and got all kinds of pushback for that. Do you think maybe because of where you publish, you're a little more insulated as opposed to somebody who's publishing for a typical newspaper?
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, very possible. I did a thing down in Seattle about a year ago with a friend of mine who's a cartoonist. He's a liberal cartoonist, Milt Prege. Used to, do cartoons for the Chicago Sun in Spokane. And we got together and did a put together a Facebook page called Righty Tighty Lefty Loosey, and then took it down to Seattle and did a demonstration down there where we had a slideshow and all that. And it was mostly all liberals in the audience. And a lady asked me, says, "Aren't you worried that your cartoons are so controversial that somebody's going to take matters in their own hands and do something very violent to you?" And she said it in a tone like it could even be me that does the violence to you. And I said, "Well, yeah, and that's exactly why I believe in the Second Amendment." And then she got this look on her face, like, "Oh my gosh!" So
you kind of are in the lap of the liberal left where you live. So
it is. It's predominantly Democrat. Mm-hmm. What I do is nationwide. I don't really stick to anything local, so it's mainly all my contacts, all my people, all my friends, and that view my cartoons are nationwide.
Now, do you find it lonely? Like, home for me is Los Angeles, and so I'm constantly. I'm just like when I'm out and about, when I'm at the grocery store, when I'm at the post office, it's literally people just, they are freaking out. They are completely freaking out. We're living in a modern Nazi Germany. It's a Handmaid's Tale. It's the worst of times. And I find myself, I was recently complaining on the YouTube channel. I got nowhere to celebrate. I think it's going great. How do you deal? Like when you're doing these political cartoons, obviously you're informed. You've got strong opinions, and like, did you just walk around just shaking your head all day? But like, or do you like me? I pretend like I can't believe it's going on either. People are like, "This is the worst." I'm like, "Yeah, I know. It's crazy."
you just encapsulated exactly my life, and that's. That's exactly what I do. I do a lot of floor pacing, phone conversations. Luckily, I have some friends locally, and my brother who comes over, and we vent a lot. I hear you. I'm not. There's a lot of anonymity to drawing cartoons. People don't see your face every time you draw a cartoon. Some people don't even put a face to your cartoon. It's just the cartoon. They don't even look at the name up in the corner. They just either like it or don't. And I know that because when I was younger and I would look at a political cartoon, I never paid attention to who drew the cartoon. I just let go. So there is some of that where people just don't know who I am and don't really care. Whereas in your situation, your face is out there when you tell a joke. You put your face on the line, your rear end on the line every time you do something. So, whereas I don't have that problem.
Well, I did this thing. There's a event in Los Angeles every year, Politicon. Uh-huh. And all the pundits get together and it's all crazy and fun. And I was on this panel and no one knew I was, conservative. No one knew my so we're all just doing jokes, and everybody just finds it hilarious. Everything's going great, and then I go, "Yeah, it's really tough being a right leaning comedian." And man, the shock in that room!
Oh my.
It was like the carnival when you throw the ball at the little clown, the stuffed animal, and the clown just goes down. It was just like that. The audience just faces, just boom, 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 boom. Just the disappointment and horror. Hey, I want to ask you this. While I still got you, are you still doing the band? Online, it says you're part of a band, Tony and the Tigers.
Oh, I retired from that about 4 years ago. Well, I didn't totally retire from music. I just retired from that. I'm so busy with what I got going. I have a daughter who's 3 and a half now.
Fantastic.
And she took a lot of time. I was gone playing music almost every weekend, at least 2 to 3 weekends a month. And, although I enjoyed playing, I just didn't want to give her that lifestyle of her dad being gone every weekend.
Yeah.
That was, And so it had, I just felt it was time. I'm 61 years old. I didn't want to be up there in a wheelchair, reliving my glory days, so.
Well, I think it's, but you're a guitarist, yeah?
Well, I'm a guitarist. I'm a bass player, singer.
Wow. But you, so what's your guitar of choice? What's the one, when you're like, I'm just going to pick up my guitar, what's your guitar of choice?
I have an Epiphone acoustic.
Nice.
That I just have kicked around. I have a Fender Telecaster, kind of a weird Telecaster from the 70s that I pick up every once in a while. And I have a Fender Precision Bass. Those are my three guitars.
You can't go wrong with the Tele.
No, you can't.
I don't think they've made a bad Telecaster ever.
Yeah.
All right.
Although it hasn't improved my playing any.
that's the one I'm still looking for. I'm still looking for the guitar. Like, oh wow, well, when I pick this one up, I'm Eric Clapton. That's the one I'm looking to buy. The name of the book is "Make America Laugh Again." Tony, I can't thank you enough. Keep the good times rolling, man.
Thank you.
Keep drawing those weird, wonderful cartoons. I love it. And
awesome.
It's where it's at. Make America Laugh Again. Thank you so much, Tony Bronco. Have a great day and enjoy acting disappointed as you walk through your neighborhood.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Do we want to just pick it back up and have Rick fold it in, or do we want to start a new one and just give it to him in three hunks?
He can find the dead space and drop Tony in the middle so we can just keep going.
Alrighty. Resetting my watch. Resetting my watch. I like that guy. I like that Tony Bronco. I don't know. I think I messed up his last name. I might have said Branco. I'm in Long Island. I'm on Long Island. And so I see a Latino name. I'm guessing this guy, Antonio. Who knows? Maybe he's Italian. I should have asked. That's what a great interviewer I am. I took him. Hey, Branco.
I love that stuff. I'm just insanely jealous of anyone who has that kind of artistic talent to be both a musician who plays multiple instruments and have such incredible drawing ability. Like, I got nothing.
I think it's the same part of the brain. I don't know. I'm just guessing, but I think it's that same creative, hey, you're good with spatial and drawing and you can also do music. I wish I had more of it. I tell you, I got some a few years ago, like how to cartoon. I wanted to just do better, how to draw the human form, blah, 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 blah. And it did. It improved my abilities a little bit. I haven't really applied myself. But like those people who do sit at amusement parks and they sit at county fairs and they do those, like the kid on the skateboard, that's actually a talent. I find it...
Caricatures, right?
Yes!
Yes.
I find it amazing that they can do it. They look at somebody and they go, oh, it's the nose. Bing, bang, boom. Little nose, da-da-da, draw them on a skateboard. I know it's fun to make fun of them, but I like what Antonio's doing. I like what Tony's doing. I like that Michael Ramirez, God bless those guys. They are doing it. Okay, so this is the pop culture lifestyle segment of the show. We got the 4th of July coming up.
We started ours yesterday.
So did the people on Long Island. Yeah. And I guess it's because it was Saturday night and people are like, let's do it. Here's what I think. I thought it was in my neighborhood, people just going, we got all the stuff left over from last year. Let's just go ahead and burn these off. And then on the 4th, we'll get into the new stuff. But you went to a party. There was a huge display.
Oh, huge. It was actually, I think 2 years ago, Georgia took off all the restrictions on fireworks for the general public. But this particular individual's been doing it for 20 years and just never cared anyway. But literally, it was like going to a city, fireworks display, except you were really close and it was in their huge front yard and you're literally right under the fireworks. I mean, and they're going up and these weren't sprinklers. Let's put it that way. or sparklers. Yeah, biggest home fireworks display I have ever seen.
I am going to try to get some on video this year. I'm going to get some footage of it. Hopefully we can use it on the YouTube channel at some point. But it's insane. And I need to figure out a way to capture it. This whole neighborhood that where I live, Levittown, Long Island, it goes nuts. And I got to capture some of it and put it on. I love the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love it. And this is going to sound very hokey and very AMDJ. But, like, just be safe, you guys. Just don't lose a finger.
Don't blow anything off.
Yeah. Light that sucker and stand back. Light that sucker and stand back. Okay.
It's amazing we lived. We used to, like, shoot Roman candles at one another.
Oh, geez. The things, you look back and you're like, wow. I am very, very happy I got all my fingers and my eyeballs.
Yep.
Let's talk about this. Let's talk about The Incredibles 2. Let's talk about this movie. I saw it. You saw it. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed. Not insanely disappointed. It was okay. I saw it at a matinee. Like, same. When I saw the first Incredibles, mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm ready to get back in line. I'm ready to get back in line and see this again. It was so awesome. It was so wonderful. It was so good. It hit on every level. Incredibles 2, meh. It was all right.
I left with a smile. I mean, I thought a lot of it was cute. I love the little baby and all his various powers. That made me laugh. But it was very plot transparent to me from about 3 minutes after the person who ended up being the villain showed up. Like, you just knew that's the bad guy.
Oh, yeah. There was no big surprise. And it was all very, to me, and listen, the guy who wrote and directed The Incredibles and, you know, did Incredibles 2, Brad Bird, fantastic talent, insane talent. He did one of my favorite movies ever, The Iron Giant. He's been with these Pixar guys since before, when they were first working at Disney. Brad Bird and John Lasseter, when they were really, really young men, first working at Disney, they were assigned to work on this straight-to-DVD movie called The Brave Little Toaster. Mm-hmm. And if you ever, it's weird. You'll catch it on TV at weird times. The Brave Little Toaster is an incredible. They took this little tiny, I think it was a children's book. They adapted it. It's wonderful. And then they were promptly fired by Disney. Disney's like, thank you for that wonderful, wonderful piece of filmmaking that we didn't even know was there. And then they fired him. And then Lasseter went and did Pixar. And then Brad Bird went off and did Iron Giant, and then they decided to combine forces because they're old buddies, and like, okay, we'll do The Incredibles. And I don't think Brad Bird, because he never wanted to do a sequel to Iron Giant, mm-hmm. because he said it would kind of diminish it. And I know this happens in Hollywood, the quid pro quo of it all. Listen, if you want to do another movie in X, Y, and Z, you got to do this sequel for us first. Just do us this favor, and then we'll get to give you what you really want. So let's keep one eye open for what Brad Bird really wants to do, because I'd love to sit down and talk to him about this, because it just seems so, ugh. When I saw the trailer for The Incredibles 2, I'm like, oh, now Holly Hunter's character, she's going to leave the house and she's going to be the hero. And what's the big dumb man going to do when he has to be in charge of the kids? It's going to be crazy. Oh, no, he messed up his daughter's love life and he doesn't know how to change a baby's. It was that again. It was like a movie of the week. It was just The Incredibles was so original and wonderful and good. And The Incredibles 2 was like, yeah. Yeah, that's. I mean, sequels are tough, but yeah. That's nothing to write home about. I ain't gonna get it on Blu-ray. I ain't gonna be buying it on DVD. Actually, you want to know my favorite part of the movie?
What?
The very beginning, when Craig T. Nelson and Holly Hunter, they all apologized, hey, we're sorry it took us 16 years. Sorry, yeah, right? It took so long.
You know, that was actually educational for me because I thought the dad was voiced by someone else.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. I never knew who. I knew the mom was Holly Hunter. I actually thought the dad was voiced by someone else, and I was wrong.
Who does the voice of Frozone? I'm blanking.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Just so great.
Mm-hmm.
Just so great.
But
honey, where is my super suit? Why do you need it? It's just that scene in the first Incredibles is so hilarious when literally the giant robot's destroying the city and he's running around trying to find his super suit and his wife has company coming over. It's just hilarious. I'm trying to do something for the greater good. Greater good? I'm the greater.
I'm actually making a thing of going to a matinee on Tuesdays now because it's $5.
That's great.
So, yeah, I think this week we're going to go see that movie Tag because it looked like it would make me laugh.
Tag looks funny and loosely based on a true story, I guess.
Yeah.
That got a little bit out of hand. Hopefully it'll be great. Hopefully it'll be very funny.
$5?
For $5, you can't beat it.
Exactly. And then the Ant-Man and the Wasp is coming out here shortly.
I'm looking...
That's right after the 4th, the 6th, or the 7th.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I enjoy the... boy, this is horrible. My brain is mush. What's the girl's name? The Wasp.
Oh, now you're going to challenge me?
Yeah, she was on the island, the Lost, and she was in the Hobbit, and she played the elf chick.
Steven Tyler's daughter?
No. Boy, we suck.
Not Liv Tyler?
No, Liv Tyler was in Lord of the Rings. She could throw those ears on. Livy, throw them on. And the girl from Lost who plays Wasp. In Ant-Man and the Wasp, ooh, when she was in The Hobbit, ooh, throw those ears on. Throw them
Evangeline
on.
Evangeline Lilly.
Evangeline Lilly, put the ears on, leave them on. Then you got Cate Blanchett, Queen of the Elves. Put on the ears, baby. Put them on, leave them on. It's fantastic. I got my thing. I got my thing. And I'm
elf
completely,
ears.
Oh, my gosh. When Liv Tyler starts talking Elvish or Cate Blanchett starts talking Elvish or Evangeline Lilly, oh, that's it. That's it. Get me to the Renaissance Festival.
I do love a Renaissance Festival.
I've never been.
You've never been?
I've never been.
Oh, my gosh.
I want to go, but here's where I want to go even before that, and it just bums me out. We're doing the best that we can. And we will do better. And there's members of the Loftus Party team who are more organized than the others. Like Gypsy is organized. I am not. And I'm desperately, desperately trying to get organized. There, you know what I should, here's what I got to do. I got to get a calendar. Literally, I got to get an old school paper calendar and I need to start circling dates. I missed one of the biggest cosplay events in the nation. It was last month down in Anaheim. I missed it.
You should have been there doing video.
I know. I put it on Twitter all the time. Now the cosplay girls, yes, I find it very sexy. I find it extremely sexy because these. Some of the girls they're like just want to be porn stars and they're in it for the money, whatever. But at heart, these are women who are geeky and they're talented. They can make these outfits. Some of these you'll see some of the girls, the cosplay girls will post little videos like, oh, I'm making the outfit from Metroid, or I'm making an outfit from Halo, and the stuff that they can do with a glue gun, fabric. Foam core, and then they look, they make this stuff, they make the weapons, they make the swords, they make the outfits, then they're smoking hot when they put them on, and they have that sense of fun and whimsy that like, yeah, I'm wearing this. I'm wearing it all day. It's just like, I love, love, love it. So yes, I'm turned on by it, for sure, but I also have a lot of respect for the craft, but I missed it. And the other one that I missed, there was a huge YouTube convention in Anaheim 2 weeks ago, two weekends ago. If you are a listener, here's what I want you guys to do. Go to theloftusparty.com. And you can leave messages and you can comment and do all this stuff. If there's something cool that we need to cover, please, for the love of God, go to theloftusparty.com and post it, leave it, because I'm playing catch up. I want to go to E3. Boom, missed it, and that is just, I feel horrible. Missed E3, missed the big cosplay convention, missed the big YouTube thing. Thankfully, you, Gimlet, were like, hey, you might want to give Politicon a heads up. Yeah, and I'm right. Like, holy crap,
totally forgot.
There's a lot of stuff going on. Yep. I got a lot of plates spinning. So I'm asking, for your help. America, if there's something cool that's about to happen, that I need to cover, that we need to go to, please let me know. So, I love the cosplay, love the YouTube convention. I'm highly addicted to the YouTube of it all. Going to get better at Instagram. My, a buddy of mine was at the big YouTube convention. And this is the wonderful part of it all. There's a YouTube sensation, this girl. I've never heard, there's so many huge, ginormous YouTubers and people on Instagram. This girl, and this is horrible, I don't know her name, she's at this YouTube convention. They expected 30,000 people to want to see her. I don't know what this chick does. I don't even know her name. They expected 30,000 people. 50,000 people showed up to see her. Not all of them could get in. It turned into there was a bit of a scuffle. People were upset because they were waiting in the heat and they couldn't get. Holy crap.
That's like rock stars in our generation.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
There's and our YouTube channel's doing well. We're building. Slow and steady wins the race. It's like I think I can. There's an algorithm you have to beat. You guys, thank you for sharing the videos, because that's helped spreads the word. And then there's an algorithm, definitely. Oh my God. I'll tell this story real quick before we're out of time. For the first time. Now, I've been on Fox and Friends quite a bit recently, and for the first time, YouTube rolled back our numbers. I was watching last week's video, the one where I was talking about I don't trust the British, whatever, and the counter had us at like 650, 660, you know, getting ready to we were going fast. I'm like, okay, this one's going to get to 1,000. Like super fast, because it's only been up for X amount of time and it's already got 660, 670 views. We are going. I go, I cook dinner, I have dinner with my family, I come back, I look at YouTube, and they're like, oh, this thing's got like 530 views. And I'm like, are you kidding me? All right, now, maybe it's a glitch, maybe I'm paranoid, but I know Cheryl Atkinson, it happened to her. But she was smart. She like documented it. She took screen pictures. She's like, hey, YouTube, how does this happen?
Right.
She had a video that had like 3,000 hits that suddenly went down to 2,000 hits. Because here's the deal. And this is where I see if it's going too fast, if a video is getting so many views so fast, then it'll start like trending and they'll encourage other people to watch it. And I hope I'm wrong. I just know what I saw with my own eyes. They took away 150 some odd views. So, but I love it. I love YouTube. I love content creation. I want to do more, better stuff, and I will. And we'll go back out. I'll get myself a calendar. I won't miss the big events anymore.
Michael and his day planner.
I used to have a day runner. I loved that thing. I loved it. So check this out. Check this out. So,
did you have a trapper keeper too?
Back in the day, you needed it. You needed it.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, you did.
I'm sorry.
That was always the fun of like the back to school stuff. You know, what kind of notebooks were you going to get? what kind of like cool art was going to be on the front, all that good stuff.
I'm sorry.
I watched.
Totally off topic.
I watched last night Kevin Smith doing stand-up comedy. Now, the only reason I tuned in, because I don't really watch a lot of stand-up. I don't want it affecting me. I don't want whatever. But, like, I'm clicking around, and on I think it was Showtime, they're like, Kevin Smith performs his stand-up comedy special 1 hour before he has his massive heart attack. Like, that was when you hit...
What?
When you hit guide on the channel to tell you, here's what you're about to watch. They're like, watch Kevin Smith do stand-up 1 hour before his massive heart attack. They weren't like, Kevin Smith regales you of stories from Hollywood, or you'll crack up when Kevin Smith does this. They're like, hey, in an hour, this guy has a heart attack. So I'm like... So it worked. I tuned in because I'm like, I wonder if like his arm is doing anything weird. Is he in pain already? Are you going to see signs? And
so you don't just really. Watched it to be kind of like a vulgar voyeur.
Yes. Yes. It
had nothing to do with wanting to laugh. You probably don't remember a punchline. You're just waiting for him to turn blue.
Kevin Smith tells a good story. It was an evening of Kevin Smith telling Hollywood stories, but unfortunately, he was talking a lot about his wife, like a lot. He was very, I mean, he's doing stand up. The guy's a writer and a director, mm-hmm. and he's a gifted storyteller. But boy, he was way too many F bombs, way too many. You know, using the word shit, he doesn't need it. And then I'm thinking about myself. I'm like, I know I do the same thing, and I gotta cut it way back. I'm just casually dropping F bombs and blah blah blah. But he was telling, and he, I guess he's been married for 20 years, and he starts talking about some really really personal stuff with him and his wife. Like, we're like, I don't know what kind of marriage you have, but like, she can't be cool with, he talks about the sound she makes when she's giving him the oral pleasures. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing?
Well, maybe he's just making it up.
No, because his whole shtick is, he's just telling you, man. Cause so anyway, man, I'm on this balcony and my wife, man, she's, you know, we've been together for 20 years and she knows this. And my wife, that part was awkward. But
well, if you're gonna do a joke about a wife or a girlfriend, you all get permission in advance, right?
We do now.
We do now. So apparently, once you didn't, and it was a problem.
And I think that's what Kevin Smith just did. And that might have been why he had the heart attack. Here's the wonderful thing. At the end of the stand-up special, he comes back and he's like, here I am in the exact space. I was in this green room. I was lying on this couch. This is when I had my massive heart attack. And he said he was baked. He said he was just completely baked. And that when he had his heart attack and he went to the emergency room, the doctors were like, wow, you're having a heart attack. You're being very calm. And he's like, I am baked. I am so high right now. And they're like, well, that's good. That probably saved your life. So that's something you never want to tell a stoner. You never want to tell a stoner smoking weed saved your life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but check it out. And then he said something that I
low and a couple other things.
Who knows? The other thing that I found fiercely hilarious about it is he's talking about how healthy he was. He talked about his battle with sugar. He's like, I dropped like 80 pounds because I don't eat sugar anymore. Sugar's the enemy. I thought sugar was my friend. So ironically, he dropped a bunch of weight. Stopped eating sugar and then has the heart attack. I hope he's okay. He tells a very funny story about directing a Supergirl episode. I like that guy. I'd like to have him. I'd love to have him on the show. When I get back to LA, I'll reach out and try to get him because he's a big time comic book guy, and I'd love to have him on the show. We could talk about that. Okay. You guys, next week we'll have Ant-Man and the Wasp talk. We'll have more political talk. We got a great guest. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to tune in next week. Thank you so much. for listening. Thanks so much for telling your friends and sharing the videos. Go to theloftusparty.com if you've got something that we need to know about. Let old Mikey know. Have a great 4th of July. Remember, light it and throw it. Light it and throw it. Don't hang on to that firecracker. I'll see you guys next week.